thank you for joining us on this edition of Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. Have you ever thought if I could travel back in time, I would change, well, insert personal or historical event here? It's an altruistic thought, and one explored by our guest on this edition of Book Spectrum, Dr. Kevin Shuey, oncologist and author of the new science fiction, historical fiction book, Bad Love Strikes. That's where the option becomes reality to the main characters. Dr. Shuey, let's talk about this and welcome to Book Spectrum.
Thanks, Chris. It's so nice to be with you today. And so Bad Love Strikes is really an amazing and fun book. It's really the story of a group of teenagers growing up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee in 1974, which happens to be the year before I graduated from high school. And so they call themselves the Bad Love Gang since they were little kids growing up together. And it's really modeled after my boyhood gang. And so they're out on an adventure on a weekend, and they accidentally discover a tunnel that leads to a top secret World War II time travel machine called the White Hole Project. Now, the White Hole Project was built at the request of President Franklin Roosevelt by Albert Einstein as a backup plan to the Manhattan Project. So if Hitler would have gotten the atomic bomb first, we were going to use the White Hole to go back in time and foil Hitler's plans for world domination. So the Bad Love Gang, they learn how to use the White Hole Project, which will only take you back to World War II years because it was a backup plan to the Manhattan Project. And they devise a mission to go to Poland in 1944 to try and rescue a small group of Holocaust victims. And the way they run their mission, they hijack a famous World War II plane. This is right out of the history books. It's called the Phantom Fortress.
Yes, I want to get into the Phantom Fortress. We have with me Dr. Kevin Shuey. He's the author of the book, Bad Love Strikes. This particular plane was known as the Phantom Fortress because when it landed in Belgium, the party that kind of intercepted the plane opened it up and found nobody in there. But not only that, it was abandoned in midair,
yeah,
it seemed like.
Yeah, so the Phantom Fortress is just a fascinating story. And I'm a World War II history buff, and I get all these journals and magazines regarding World War II. And so last year, I read the story of the Phantom Fortress. And it was really, it compelled me to do a lot of research on my own. And it was really the spark that ignited Bad Love Strikes. And so the Phantom Fortress was a B-17 bomber that came into land in Kortenberg, Belgium in November of 44. Problem was, there was no one scheduled to land. This is a British Allied base. And the plane comes in and lands, and it sits there in the field with its engines running, and no one gets off the plane.
Nobody
was literally in there. Yeah, no one was there. Well, they waited 20 minutes, and then finally a brave British officer, a guy named John Crisp, went out to investigate. He gets on the plane, Chris, and there's no one on board, but there's leather flight jackets laying on the floor. The parachutes are lined up against the fuselage. There's candy wrappers open all over the place, signs of recent occupation, but no one on board. So there's a story about that plane, but the story about what happened in the air and what was observed and documented on the ground do not match.
No, it doesn't match up. And they found the crew somewhere else in Belgium. They tried to talk it off, too. I was reading up on that after I read your book.
They actually found the crew back in England by the time they get to them. And so they were picked up apparently by British soldiers in Belgium. But nevertheless, you have to buy this concept that the plane restarted its engines after they bailed out and then safely flew itself to an Allied base and landed all by itself.
It doesn't add up. It really doesn't.
No. And it's a great story in and of itself. But I took that story and I weaved my childhood experience with my gang of friends growing up and my knowledge of physics and said, well, heck, there could be time travelers commandeering that plane. And that's how Bad Love Strikes was born.
Well, let's get into the story in the book. The Bad Love Gang was not simply a group of random teens. They were based on you and your friends, as you said. First, I want to get into this. You actually had to explain this in the book to a character from the 1940s. You probably want to explain it to people now, since they're not familiar with the slang of the 1970s, if they're not familiar with the slang of the 1970s, that is. Bad Love Gang was more of a... It was more like the 70s bad, as in... Everything good was bad. It was really bad. So it was really a good love gang, but you weren't talking about bad love gang. And the you got into that in the book with one of the characters, and that was kind of funny when you addressed it there.
Yeah. So, you know, the Bad Love Gang is kind of with, and I have this musical brain. So, you know, Isaac Hayes, is in the background, and I'm thinking to myself, well, bad is good, and so I'm trying to explain it to one of the Holocaust, one of the people that we rescue from the Holocaust, and really had fun with that. So the reality of it is that nine of the Bad Love Gang characters are actually based on real people. And two have actually passed on, which leaves seven, and I'm one of those. So six of the Bad Love Gang, received their copy of Bad Love Strikes after the book was published, and it's created some amazing interactions between us with phone calls and emails and such. But all of us had nicknames.
Now, do they still call you Bubble Butt?
Yeah. And so I'm Bubble Butt or BB, and I'm the narrator of the book. But there's, you know, there's Goondoggy and Runt and Crazy Ike and
the Pud,
Willie and
Meatball.
Waldo and
gotta
all
like
these
Meatball.
People.
Yep. I like this concept for another reason. A lot of authors and well, they wouldn't put the ego aside like you did. They'd probably say, well, our nicknames were cool, like Iron Man or Ace. Yeah, we'll use those nicknames instead. No, you had Bubble Butt, Goondoggy, the Pud. at least,
exactly.
That's where it works. How similar were these characters to you and your friends?
So, as I said, nine of them were actually based on real people. And I'll tell you a funny story, Chris. After I sent the book to the Bad Love Gang that are surviving, one of the wives emailed me. This is a couple that lives in North Carolina, and she says, you know, this is Willie's actual wife, and she says, you know, I stole Bad Love Strikes from my husband, and I'm sitting there reading it at night while we're laying in bed, and he's half asleep, and I'm reading your book, and she says, I just start shaking, Willie, and I'm like, this guy nailed you.
I have Dr. Kevin Shuey on with me. This is Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani. Dr. Kevin Shuey is the author of this fascinating concept of a science fiction, historical fiction book. I guess I'll call it historical science fiction book, Bad Love Strikes. So let's say these kids, the teenagers, found their way to a time travel machine. What brought them, the characters, that is, what brought them to want to travel back to rescue the Jewish people and the Romani? That's another thing you put in there. The idea is the Holocaust really was all of the people Hitler didn't want around. The Romani, which most people know as gypsies, Jewish people, as we know, they even had a special concentration camp for Catholic priests.
Right.
What prompted your characters to want to do this?
Yeah. So, as you know, the Bad Love Gang are growing up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And Oak Ridge, Tennessee was the first, city in the South to integrate and the schools. And so in 1955, there was a Life magazine article about these African-American students that were starting their first day of school in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Well, Oak Ridge, you know, was home of the Manhattan Project. And so really all these folks that are left in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, after the Manhattan Project had been successful and World War II was over, these are highly skilled people. And so the Bad Love Gang are they're kids from, you know, families that are either highly skilled or highly educated or both. And so they're very knowledgeable in terms of, you know, the Manhattan Project and the Holocaust. And so they're sitting around and they decide that they want to do something that's meaningful with their time travel mission. And so for their first mission, they decide that they're going to hijack the Phantom Fortress, but they're going to use it to rescue potential victims of the Holocaust and in particular Jews and Gypsies. And so that's the plot. I mean, and it's a great plot because you have a group of teenagers that are all different personalities and in various ways, and they're working together for a great common cause.
Kevin, the book is dedicated to your sister. How much of an influence has she been on the book?
Yeah. So, as you know, Chris, I'm a radiation oncologist. My day job is for the last 32 and a half years, I take care of cancer patients day in and day out, treat them with radiation therapy. And so cancer doesn't really know any boundaries, right? I mean, it affects, it's an equal opportunity effector. And so cancer hit home for our family 3 years ago in December of 2016. My oldest sister, Kathy Williams, she was diagnosed with stage 3 triple negative breast cancer, which is a particularly virulent form of breast cancer. And so I was tasked with helping her navigate through this. And she went through 6 months of chemotherapy and then double mastectomy and reconstruction. And I'm happy to say that now 2.5 years later, Kathy still remains in a complete remission from her breast cancer. Well, anyway, Kathy and I grew up together, and we were crazy about anything related to time travel. And so it's one of those things. As a child, you know, you have your siblings, and some of your siblings you might not have a lot in common with, but Kathy and I just gravitated towards anything related to time travel, and we just talk about it all day long. So anyway, I'm writing the book. I start writing the book on January 14th, and I'm about 7 to 10 days into writing the book. And I go back, I'm doing it as a Word document. I go back maybe 7, 10 days later to the first day, and I look at it and I stare at it, and I'm like, January 14th, that's Kathy's birthday. And it just sent chills and shivers through my body because I didn't realize that I had started writing my book on her birthday, and it was like a light turned on. I'm like, I have to dedicate this book to my sister Kathy. And that's the truth. That's what happened. And she loves the book, and it's really been a terrific thing for us.
Bad Love Strikes, Kevin, also combines your interest in World War II. You said earlier in this conversation you are a World War II buff. How'd you get involved, or how'd you get interested that far into World War II? I'm one of those guys, too. I really enjoy researching World War II, but how did you become interested?
You know, I grew up, I'm a classic baby boomer, so I was born in 1956, and I grew up in a kind of a lower middle class neighborhood in St. Louis, Missouri, and it was, you know, every other home there were kids. And so my dad had served in the Philippines as a sergeant under MacArthur. He actually carried grenades for his platoon and he was in the shooting war. And so just because my dad was a veteran, and most of the kids that I grew up with, their parents were veterans, and here we are, all the homes look the same. There's just row after row The way you know the difference of a home is the way the trees are planted in the front yard, or if it has a one or two car garage. And so, you know, it was that background of coming out of World War II that we're growing up. And so our themes playing as kids were really, you know, basically World War II type themes. You know, we were either rolling in boxes, pretending we were tanks, or we were going on missions, you know, against the Axis forces. And it was part of life, Chris. And then I was just during that time frame, I was a John Wayne fan. You know, it's like, well, I ain't gonna hit ya.
That's a good one.
And so, you know, it's that's the life that I grew up in. And it's also worth saying that, you know, in those days we didn't have internet or cell phones or our computers. There were no personal computers. There were even no video games. So if you didn't go outside and go on adventure, you were going to be one lonely kid. And that's the world that I grew up in.
You take the world of the 1970s, kids hanging out and having a good time, and you take your interest in World War II. You also mixed in the other aspect. One of the ones that got me really involved with reading and researching World War II, into the book Bad Love Strikes, the underlying scientific advantage, the subplot between the Axis and the Allies, if you will, Germany, Japan, and the U.S. in particular, as they try to take a win sort of underground, let's say off the battlefield, when they tried to win World War II in the science labs. And we know about the Manhattan Project. We talked about all of that. But this is actually plausible, the potential of scientists trying to study time travel. In fact, the Nazis, it's written that the Nazis, Adolf Hitler, commissioned some scientists to try to build flying saucer technology, the ones that legendary aliens would be using. There are drawings about this, and there is speculation that maybe alien technology could have been used. Now, of course, that's a little far-fetched, but on the other hand, this has
not
been
so
discussed
sure.
In documentaries.
I'm not so sure that it's so far-fetched. So,
exactly.
And so, Bad Love Strikes. When you open this book and you go to the first chapter, Bad Love Strikes tells you and teaches you about the history of Area 51. And so Area 51 actually started in January of 1942. It literally started 1 month after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And my book goes back to that time. Well, from a physics perspective, if you want to do time travel, if you want to go back and forth through a wormhole, which in my book I call a white hole, you have to have something called exotic matter. And it is exotic matter that stabilizes the passageway through a wormhole. And this is according to Einstein's theory of relativity. The problem is that for my book to become quote-unquote real, I have to have exotic matter. So where am I going to get it? Well, I got exotic matter from Area 51. And without betraying too much of what the book says, you know, exotic matter has to come from somewhere. We don't have it here on Earth. So I find a way to get it from Area 51. And my book actually gives a plausible explanation for how Area 51 got to be the way it is today. So I think there will probably be some Area 51 and aficionados who will really fall in love with Bad Love Strikes.
Well, let's hope nobody with a black uniform and sunglasses knocks on your door and tries to sell us the book.
I've actually pondered that possibility, Chris.
Something else you do, it's a little different in Bad Love Gang. Maybe a lot different, depending on what books people read. You intertwine the story with links to songs that readers can listen to while they read. Kind of like a musical score in a movie, whether it be in the background with the characters or in your, let's say, music brain, as you describe it.
Yeah, so again, growing up in the 60s, my uncle was actually a jukebox vendor. And we grew up, my sisters and I, we grew up with a Wurlitzer type 45 RPM jukebox in our basement. And it was loaded with all the hit tunes from the 60s and early 70s. And of course, my parents also put their fair share of Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, for example, on the jukebox. But this is how I grew up. I grew up, you know, sitting there watching my sisters and their friends and their dates dance to the jukebox. And also, if my parents were having a party, and it imprinted my brain with all the music of the 60s and early 70s. And it was actually a great way to grow up. So as I'm writing Bad Love Strikes, and it's the book is taking place in 1974, you know, I started to play some of this music, and it was inspiring for me in terms of writing the book. For example, you know, the Bad Love Gang, they head out on their motorcycles for a weekend adventure before they discover the tunnel by accident, and they're playing the song Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf as they're taken off on their motorcycles. And we even go back to when we're trying to impress the cutest girl in the neighborhood who's teaching us all to do the twist. And so we have Chubby Checker, Let's Twist Again. And
yes.
There's, you know, In the Year 2525 by Zager and Evans is playing in the background.
Yes, that's definitely appropriate.
Yeah. It's playing in the background when Bomar and Bubble Butt are first discovering the White Hole Project.
Hey,
and,
you throw some Three Dog Night in there. You got to like them. Chef.
Yeah, there's Three Dog Night.
Got to have Isaac Hayes.
Well, that's part of explaining how the Bad Love Gang got their name, right? I mean, you know, bad is good. That Shaft is a bad mother. And check him out.
The book is Bad Love Strikes. You're listening to Book Spectrum. The author is Dr. Kevin Shuey. We cannot talk time travel and history without discussing the inevitable timeline changes potentially involved. You did look back at a few people who were rescued, including Meatball's, I love the name, Meatball's time travel love interest. Oh, Meatball, I love you. I could just imagine that.
Well,
I don't want to give too much away.
You can't give too much away about the ending, but always remember that I'm actually a cancer specialist, and I deal with death and dying on a daily basis. And so, you know, it's the old Yogi Berra line that it's not over till it's over. And so, although there is a little bit of sadness there, the book actually is totally a feel-good book. And when you get done with Bad Love Strikes, I promise you that you feel good. And it's in the epilogue where there are a couple of big surprises. And I think that those surprises really open the door for the sequel. And so just, you know, keep an open mind and stay tuned about
I heard
that.
You say sequel.
Yeah.
Now, I did read the end, not going to say anything, but if you're open to a sequel, it might be very interesting. What are you kind of thinking about for it? Or is it just a big surprise?
Well, I can get a couple of hints out there. So the sequel is actually 10% written already. I started writing the sequel on October 27th of this year. And my publisher wants the sequel by June 1st, and I'm right on schedule for that. So for one thing I can tell you about the sequel is that I went to Warm Springs, Georgia in October, and I spent a day at the Little White House, which was Franklin Roosevelt's second home in Warm Springs, Georgia. And he would go there because of his history of having polio, or maybe it was Guillain-Barré syndrome, but whatever it was those waters, those warm mineral-rich waters in Warm Springs, Georgia, were very therapeutic for him, and he built a home there, and they called it the Little White House. So He actually, Roosevelt dies at age 63 on April 12th of 1945, he's having his picture painted by Madame Shumatov, and he has a massive stroke and he dies within a couple of hours. Well, anyway, Roosevelt was the one who really commissioned the building of the Whitehall Project, and he will loom large in the sequel to Bad Love Strikes. And the other part of that I can tell you is that as you go through a wormhole, or in this case, a Whitehall, it doesn't just connect different points in time. If you want to do intergalactic space travel, you're going to go through a wormhole. And so time and space are very closely connected. And we'll have a little bit more to say about that in the sequel, Chris.
Kevin, that's just a bit too intriguing for me. I'm really looking forward to the sequel to this, but I do want to talk about your background a bit. You were a radiation oncologist for 32-plus years. This really isn't your first foray into writing. Now, you did say that it was your first book, but you've regularly written sketches for cancer survivors.
Oh, yeah. So this is great stuff, Chris. Every year, the first Sunday of June is officially National Cancer Survivors Day. And for the past 9 years, this year, upcoming year, will be our 10th time to do this. We have an event here at our Red Rocks Medical Center, Alliance Cancer Care, Colorado at Red Rocks. We have an event where roughly 1,000 people show up in our parking lot on that first Sunday of June. And every year we have a theme. So for example, our theme this past June of 2019 was Guardians of Survival. And I came as Star-Lord. So it was a Guardians of the Galaxy kind of theme, and the music was the music from the 70s. So I write a skit, and I cajole the other doctors that I work with to join me in this skit. And here's how it works. So the doctors are dressed in, you know, of course, this time we had Rocket and we had Groot and Gamora and I'm Star-Lord. So we're asking each other questions or posing dilemmas up on the stage. And the answers to those questions or dilemmas are clips from songs. And I write this whole skit based on that technique, and it is hilarious. So when the songs play, everybody either dances or lip syncs along with it, and it's terrific stuff. Like, you can go to my, I have an Instagram account, Real Kevin at Real Kevin Chewy, and you can actually watch a little clip from our Guardians of Survival skit from this past June. But that's the way it works, and the patients and their friends and family, they just love it, because you don't always get to see your doctor let their hair down in front of 1,000 people on a Sunday and lip sync and dance and make fools of themselves.
That doesn't happen.
That's really what we do, and it's just so therapeutic for the patients. And so we have a tremendous amount of fun, and laughter is the best medicine, Chris.
The book is Bad Love Strikes. Kevin Chewy. Dr. Kevin Chewy, how can our listeners learn more about you and the book?
Oh, thanks, Chris. So really, I have a website. It's kevinshewy.com. So it's kevinshewe.com. I'm on Instagram at Real Kevin Chewy. And we actually just put a book trailer on the homepage of the website, and that is a tremendous amount of fun. It's a minute and 30 seconds, and it's like watching a movie preview of Bad Love Strikes. And so I really think my website at kevinshuey.com is a terrific way to learn more about me. And certainly the Instagram account is tremendously entertaining. And the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available at Target and Walmart online. Just type in Bad Love Strikes. And you can even type in Bad Love Strikes on YouTube and watch the book trailer that way. So there's a lot of different ways to learn about me and the book, Chris.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for coming on to Book Spectrum with us. You can find out more and links to Kevin's book also on our website, bookspectrum.com. I'm Chris Cordani. Thank you for listening.